Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D.L. White. Chapter 14. Dark Truths. James went through his pre-conjuring routine. Deep breaths, shoulder shrugs, squats. Then he held his notebook up to his chest. Nick stood by the dorm room's light switch, while James drew the symbols so fast that his hands were a blur. The portal snapped into existence and grew to full size before Nick had time to turn the light off. The rectangular shape of the portal leant back over James's desk and, judging by the grass spilling into the dorm room, was about the same height above the garden as it was above the bedroom floor. "I think I like this new ink mixture," James said, drifting upwards. "You want to try stepping through? I'll keep it open, then follow." As much as Nick didn't like the stomach-churning feeling of gravity draining from his body, he hesitated before answering. "Sure," he said, slowly approaching the portal as if it were a timid cat he was about to pet. He lifted his leg and stepped through. It was a little further on the other side than he expected, and he had to put his hand against the edge of the portal to balance. The sharp line separating Twitchell's from Brighton pushed back at him like a magnet repelling another magnet, never allowing him to touch it as he manoeuvred into Elf's Garden. Once he was through, James kicked off the ceiling at just the right angle to slowly rotate into a standing position while travelling. He pulled the nib off the end of the quill when his feet hit the grass, and the portal shrank to nothing as quickly as it had appeared. "What would happen if you'd closed it when I was halfway through?" Nick asked. "I'm not exactly sure, but best not to try it," James said. "I don't think portals have a built-in safety mechanism like lift doors or anything." Back in the house, Elf was at the table, sewing machine chattering away while she guided a denim skirt through it. Jenny was working hard on the exercise bike, which Nick had learned was actually a real bike set up in something called a turbo trainer. She nodded at Nick and James when they came in. Cece was asleep on Jenny's gown in the middle of the table. James put the kettle on, then began picking through a pile of his old notebooks, which were all filled with pages upon pages of portal symbols. Nick set up his laptop on the kitchen table and pulled up a connection to one of his game servers, at the same time as browsing the internet for cheap signal-blocking wallets. Jenny finished her workout and started stretching on a yoga mat. "Any luck with your phone?" she asked. "It's fixed," Nick said. "Good as new." "That's great." Jenny's voice was muffled. She was lying face down on the mat in some kind of painful-looking pose. The kettle boiled, and James made a pot of tea and brought it over to the table along with three mugs. He hovered over Nick's shoulder. "Any good?" he asked. On the laptop screen was an image of a wallet that looked like it was woven from sellotape and scraps of paper. "Says it can block 99% of all radio frequencies," Nick said. "Not sure I believe it." Jenny joined them. "What are you looking at?" she asked. "Faraday wallets," James said, pulling out his ID badge. "Why did you bring that back?" she asked. "I thought we'd agreed to leave them all at Twitchell's." "Nick's got a plan," James said. "A good one." Nick told them about using the ID badge as bait to lure Collier out. Elf and Jenny agreed it was worth trying. "I think the dew pond at the top of Wild Park would be a great place for the trap," James said. "It's not that far away, and it's usually deserted." "I don't know," Jenny said. "That's close to the hill fort, and I don't think the king would be very pleased if we got him involved." They talked it over while Nick kept working on his game servers and looking for wallets. James was sure that the dew pond was a good location, and in the end Jenny agreed, mainly because she couldn't think of a better alternative. "I want to take the badge up there as soon as I can," James said. give Collier a good chance to see it on his phone and investigate. If he's tracking us, Jenny said. And he'll know you're here if he is. She pointed at his badge. That's why we need the wallet to block the signal. James poured 3 cups of tea. Elf already had a glass of wine on the table next to her. Now I'm thinking about it, Jenny said. Can't we just wrap the badges in a few layers of foil? I seem to remember we did an experiment at school where that worked. I think you're right, James said, jumping up and fetching a roll of aluminium foil from a kitchen drawer. He wrapped a few layers around his badge while Nick connected to the SS Tag geolocator client and panned the map over to Brighton, where a single dot sat in the middle of the screen. I don't think it's... he started to say. Then the dot disappeared. It's gone. It worked. There must be a bit of a delay in the screen updating. That's great, James said. We can keep the badge wrapped up till we get to the Dewpond. Might be worth contacting Zen and Bobby, Jenny said, if we're going to be out in the woods. It would be good to have them around. James nodded. Nick was prodding around in the SS Tag server with a new idea floating around his head.
I'll talk to Claudia, Elf said, and get her to see if Zen and Bobby are available. If I can find her now, we'll know by morning.
She gave Cece a little nudge and whispered something into the monkey's ear. Cece yawned, then scampered off the table and out of a cat flap in the side door. We can take the badge up to the Dewpond in the morning, James said, to set the trap. I've got a portal symbol for the top of Wild Park in one of these notebooks. Be good to find it in case we need to get up there quickly. I guess we'll need to track Collier, Jenny said, and hope he takes his badge with him if he leaves Twitchell's. I'm working on that, Nick said. Hopefully I'll have something ready for the morning. Elf held up the denim skirt and inspected the freshly stitched seam.
And what else have you been up to on the Twitchell's network? She asked.
Well, Nick should have had a better answer ready for this. The truth was, while he had been trying to find out how Collier was getting the badge data, he'd also spent a lot of his time setting up his gaming servers and working out how to continue to get paid for them. I've been trying to find any traces of another hacker, you know, to figure out how Collier knows where we are all the time.
And did you find anything? Elf asked. I already told you Collier couldn't hack his way out of a paper bag.
Nothing yet, Nick said. I don't think that he, or anyone else, has compromised the server. The more I look, the more I'm convinced that he's getting the data from somewhere else.
So, other than the badge location server, you don't really need any other access to Twitchell's network?
The tone of her voice made it clear that she was angling for something. Nick waited, not wanting to incriminate himself. I think that what Elf's really getting at, James said, is we'd like to know why you hacked the school network in the first place. For a moment, Nick felt the same defensive feeling as when they'd cornered him in the study room and accused him of stealing the portal book. His gaming servers were his business, and he didn't see why the others needed to know about them. We need your help, Jenny said, sensing the building tension. But we'd like to know what we've been helping you with by giving you access to the internet here. As reluctant as he was to talk about his gaming servers, Nick knew that without the magic portals and Elf's Wi-Fi, he'd already be back in Luton, and back on St. Mark's network with its new firewalls that he still hadn't found a way to bypass. He looked at the other three, their faces more expectant than angry. Because of these new friends, staying at Twitchell's had changed from being an old-fashioned punishment to an exciting, not to mention magical, experience. If he said nothing or lied to them, he knew it would break this new bond of friendship. In the end, he didn't really have a choice. He pushed the lid of his laptop closed. "I run gaming servers for kids at my old school," he said. "They pay me for it. Not much, but enough that I can help out with my granddad's shopping and pay some of his bills. I lost access to my old servers, and I've been recreating them here on Twitchell's network." Jenny nodded. Elf took a sip of wine. James was more skeptical. "And this business you run," he said, also paid for your top-of-the-line laptop? No, Nick said quickly, running a hand gently over his pride and joy. I would never use St. Mark's network to pay for personal stuff. James started to say something, but Jenny got in first. So you used the gaming server money for your granddad, and different money for you? The conversation had taken a turn that Nick wasn't expecting. Talking about his gaming servers was one thing, but talking about finding real-world vulnerabilities and selling them was different. He'd never told anyone about that before. It could get him into real trouble. The cat flap opened and Cece reappeared. She hopped up onto the table, and instead of Jenny's gown, she chose to curl up on Nick's laptop, enjoying its warmth. Nick sighed and stroked her golden fur. The absurdity of the situation hit him. He was worrying about getting into trouble for hacking while sitting in a house in Brighton stroking a monkey when he was supposed to be at Twitchell's. I do bug hunting, he said. I find vulnerabilities in software and websites and anything connected to the internet, mostly due to errors and misconfigurations, nothing that requires super technical skills to find. But you find them, Jenny said, with your not-quite-so-super-technical skill. And you get paid for this? Nick nodded. For a deep, dark secret, it sounded pretty weak all of a sudden. I mean, compared to being able to conjure magical portals to anywhere, selling vulnerabilities was small fry. I've heard of bug bounties, James said. Big companies run programs so people can find and report issues. Surely there are loads of other people, more technical than you, that are looking. You have to compete against them? Considering he'd never spoken about this to anyone, Nick found the words flowing easily. Well, not exactly. When I said I don't have the skill to be a proper hacker or bug hunter, I meant it. I'm a proxy hunter. Other people tell me where to hunt and what kind of things to look for, and by narrowing it down, it makes it easier to find stuff. So you still find bugs, you just get told where to look? Jenny asked. Nick nodded, waiting for the next question. It came from James. Who tells you where to look? And why would they tell you? Couldn't they just do it themselves? Nick put his hands flat on the table in front of his laptop. I don't know who they are, but they do it for a couple of reasons. Firstly, they want to distance themselves from the hack. They can't be seen to be finding the bugs. And secondly, their location stops them running scanners and tools. They need someone in the UK, and sometimes even in a specific town or city, to get around certain security restrictions. That explains why they can't do it themselves, but not why they ask you, Jenny said. Specifically you, not say some dark web hacker group that spends all day doing this anyway. That's where the Zed Forum comes into it, the one the Crow gave me access to. It's one of the places that a proxy hunter can get into contact with a stack kernel. They're the ones who give out the jobs. Once you're in Zed, you can find a kernel and start working. So let me get this straight, James said pointedly. The Crow shows up, gets you into some criminal forum for people who need to be distanced from crimes, and then you get a nice new laptop. I'm not breaking the law, I'm just finding vulnerabilities. Nick had hoped to sound more confident, but instead the words were flat and lifeless. And what do you do with them when you find them? Jenny asked. Sometimes report them to the company, if they're receptive to being told about bugs. You mean if they pay? James really knew how to make things sound worse than they were. Or perhaps he just had a knack for being right. No point arguing or holding back now. Yeah, if they pay. Otherwise, there's other places to sell the information to. That's what got me the laptop. I found an exploit in a particularly high-profile target. He pushed the laptop with Cece on top, an inch across the tabletop. Listen, I've never told anyone about any of this before. That doesn't make it, James cut in, before he was silenced by Elf, who raised her wine glass out in front of her, its contents becoming a mini vortex, straining to be released. We knew he was a hacker, and we asked for his help anyway, she said. What did you think we were going to get?
some kind of school prefect, using his skills to help rescue orphaned guinea pigs. So what if he's made a little money selling some information to whoever pays? Why would we care about that? If anything, it makes it more likely that he can do what we need. Besides, think about what he's told us. We asked him, and he answered. He could have just lied to us. What would we have done then?
James opened his mouth, then closed it, pursing his lips before exhaling loudly and deflating back into his chair. Nobody said anything for a long while. If this had been a reality TV show, Nick figured that James would vote him out, Elf would vote him in, and both of them would listen to Jenny, who was staring into her mug. "I've never had a new school uniform in my life," Nick found himself saying. "Not until I got to Twitchell's. Always have stuff from when the school sells lost property. Barely had anything new even at Christmas. Doing the proxy hunter stuff gave me something to look forward to. A way of earning some money, and not just for my granddad, but for me. I'm sorry if I've let you down. If you still want me to help you, I'll do my best, I promise." To Nick's surprise, it was James that spoke. "We need your help," he said. "I need your help. Elf's right. You could have just lied to us. It's good you didn't. And you probably deserve to hear at least some of the truth about our situation. After that, who knows, you might not even want to help us." James looked from Nick to Elf, who nodded, and finally to Jenny. She smiled and lifted the teapot, swirling it to see how much was left. She poured a top-up for Nick and James, and lastly for herself. "We should start from the beginning, I guess," she said. "It all started when we found the severed tail of a squirrel." Elf coughed loudly. "Well, when Elf found the tail of a squirrel and brought it into school. It was only later that we found out it belonged to No-Tail, one of the last of the Grey Assassins." "One of the last of the what?" Nick asked, in what was the first of many interruptions to what turned out to be a tale at least as unbelievable as the magical portal, and long enough to warrant breaks for more tea, toast with butter, another glass of wine for Elf, and a midnight snack of some chocolate left over from Jenny's birthday. And just when Nick thought it couldn't get weirder, after he'd heard about talking badgers and hedgehogs, rogue foxes, evil pigeons, gluttonous seagulls, a giant fish, some kind of powerful stone, Jenny's broken ankle that got fixed by a psychotic badger, and more, he discovered the real reasons they needed his help. One was to do with Elf. Her parents had gone missing when she was 10, and she'd spent the last 4 years searching for them to no avail. The other was to do with James. He'd been bitten by a deadly snake, and then cured by a badger, the same unhinged creature that healed Jenny's ankle. And now, despite the magical anti-venom that had spent years in his blood working hard to keep him alive, it turned out that he was, in fact, slowly dying. This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.